Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. Well, it's a good day for the She Said Project podcast, wouldn't you say, Carrie?
I would totally say it's a good day.
I'm Jeanette Jerzyk, your host, national director of the She Said Project.
Carrie Rosso, founder.
That's right. Carrie, you founded a movement. We have been working on this mission of raising women's voices. We share stories and we raise women up. And that's really our mission and our goal here.
Or we distract women. I was just talking about our guest the other day and I was getting ready to go on stage, deep breathing, and all of a sudden and this badass comes out of the bathroom stall, like a bike helmet and amazing hair, and just like it was like the seas parted and there she was. And
well, you actually saw me peel off my motorcycle outfit to be wearing a dress and like to be all dialed up underneath all of the gear.
It was a moment.
It was a vision, I'm sure.
It was a vision.
And who was that vision?
It was Esau Griffiths. And I was like, I don't know who she is, but I'm going to make her be my best friend. I was in love immediately.
Well, Esau, thank you for being in the studio with us today for the She Said Project podcast.
Thank you.
I mean, I think we all have our own personal story of the moment we knew who Esau was or the moment we met Esau. I think that's a community-wide thing, actually.
I think so.
We should start a Facebook group.
I'm sorry, there should be a
hashtag.
Sound for really wide eyes.
Hashtag the day I met Esau. Because she was part of the show back in 2015, the two of you had worked on a beautiful fundraiser in our community called Power of the Purse. Shout out United Way, Women United. And you guys found each other. And I think it was magic at first sight.
How did I wind up roping you into the show? I mean, did I just follow you around and like, please spend time with me? Will you be on my show? Will you come to my house?
I was the keynote speaker for that event.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I literally stripped out of my motorcycle gear and you literally were like wide-eyed. Wow, that's so cool. And then I was a keynote speaker and you hounded me the moment the thing was over. I'm like, we have to talk right now.
Very classy, I am.
We have this thing, we have the show, we have this thing, we have the show. Can you do it? Can you do it?
Yeah, basically.
And I actually was part of that event as well and met you all right about the same time. And that was when I joined the She Said family. And once you're in, Esau, like you're in.
Woo-hoo!
You're in the She Said family because we really work hard to develop some bonds with the women and be there for each other. And you were part of an incredible cast in 2015. Some phenomenal women, phenomenal stories on that stage that night. And in just a minute, we're going to go back and listen to your story that you shared. Can you tell us a little bit about your story topic? And, you know, you were pretty brave and bold with sharing something from your past.
Well, you did something that I think is sort of the primary key in that presentation. You specifically asked me to tell a story I had never told anyone before. And because my job used to be really public, I'd told a lot of stories and I'd gotten really comfortable sharing certain parts of my history and myself. And to think about the things that really defined what was positive in my life as well as what was challenging my life, of course, they're combined. There are depths which I don't usually go because it's not safe. But you challenged me to tell a story I had never told. And there are really only a handful of stories that really stand out that for me really highlight my journey with a capital J. And that's really the first one. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I'll go big, I'll go bold, or I'll go home with my, you know, my tail between my knees. And I made a commitment to do it. And in truth, it's to this day, it is there are two times when speaking in front of people was tremendously hard. And that was that. And it was a eulogy I gave for my best friend who passed away years ago. And it had that same kind of absolute vulnerability, but also joy, because to me, sorrow and joy can come at the same time. And part of it is learning to be open to all the things that are beautiful, regardless of what's going on in the moment. And, you know, people saw that I was telling the story, and for a moment, the story was now. It's not that I was in the past. It's that the past was now. And for a moment, I was sort of outside of space and time, and being both who I was and who I am and who I will be all at the same time. And it was a really an incredible experience. Although I'm really glad it's over.
Well, it'll be a lot easier for our friends who are listening today to join us in this conversation if they get an opportunity to hear your beautiful words. So we're going to play the clip from the live show in 2015. Isak Griffiths sharing her story, and that's what she said, Champaign Urbana. Soggy Teddy Bear.
I was a beautiful, arms wide open, happy, happy child. When I was 17 months old, my mother still had to prop me up on the couch with pillows so that I wouldn't roll off and I couldn't fall down. I would sit there all day, every day, singing to myself, chattering with anyone who would come by, happy as could be. Later, my mom could stand me up on a stool with a bottle of Windex and a full roll of paper towels, and I would clean a single window, singing and chattering to myself for hours, perfectly content. And then, in the middle of one night, I woke up screaming from a horrible, horrible nightmare. Shaking, terrified, crying. And you moms know that a child who is stubborn can scream and cry for a long, long, long time. But no one came to comfort me. I was 3 years old. So in my little flannel-footed pajamas, now holding a very soggy teddy bear, I padded to my mom's bedroom, but the door was closed. In fact, it was locked, and I didn't even know my mom's room had a lock. So for a moment, I thought something was really, really wrong. So crying, I pounded on the door and I called out to my mom, but she didn't answer. I didn't know what else to do. So I kicked and I called out, but my mom didn't answer. Eventually, I realized that there were voices on the other side of the door. At first there were whispers, then there were shouting whispers, and then there were sobs, and then there was more. My father was there. In my memory, at the time, my father was a shadowy figure who would appear from time to time. And in some ways, he was my hero. He'd let me sit on his foot as he walked around the apartment. Or he'd take me with him when he'd go out, and he'd sit me up on a bar, in a bar, eating pigskins with hot sauce and sipping beer. But he was also a man that frightened me. So in the moment, outside that door, I calmed myself down and I listened. I could hear my mom begging and pleading to get to me. I heard her crying and sobbing. I heard her clawing and fighting to get to me. And I heard my father fighting back. He was hurting my mom because I was outside that door crying. He was hurting her because I was scared. He was hurting my mom because I needed her. And since that night, I have never been the same. That night I learned that if someone cared about me, they would suffer and they would feel pain. I learned that no matter how hurt and scared I was, no one would be there for me, not even my mom. I learned that no matter how hurt and how scared I got, I should feel terribly, terribly alone, because if I ask you to be there for me, I am asking you to be hurt and scared, and when you got injured, it would be all my fault. All my life, I waited for a fairy tale mother who would appear, wave her magic wand, and make my life easy. I wanted a mom who could kiss my bruises and make all the pain go away. But that fairy tale mom never came. Instead, for years, I cried, I spit, I kicked, I fought, I pounded, and I screamed, waiting for my life to get better. And it didn't. But eventually, thanks to some really good counseling, I came to accept how much I hated feeling so angry and so hurt and so abandoned all the time. More importantly, I came to understand that I could never, ever change my past. But I could change me. I will always be, at my core, a frightened little girl in flannel-footed pajamas holding on tight to a soggy teddy bear. To deny this would be a lie. But that reality is incomplete. I think reality can be revised. I think it can be improvised. So now every day that I'm alive, I choose laughter. I choose joy, and I choose love. I choose to listen and to care and to trust, and I choose to be someone that I genuinely like. These are not hats that I put on or faces that I wear. And in truth, sometimes I choose better than others because I am a work in progress. But I am reclaiming that eyes wide open, happy, happy child. At times, I still love to sing. And at times, I still love to chatter. But still, sometimes, to this day, I feel terribly, terribly alone. It doesn't mean that I am, and it doesn't mean that I have to be. In truth, I am surrounded by women who are, in part, like me, little girls holding on to soggy teddy bears. Intelligent, kind, courageous women. Beautiful, strong, and compassionate women. Trust me, flannel-footed pajamas or no, you are not, and you too never have to be alone. Choose. Please choose, because your reality is up to you.
I'm trying to figure out how to come back from that. I mean, what a powerful moment and a message to impart on the audience.
It was powerful. And one of the things that I loved about your story and about the challenge that we give to all the speakers, if you're known for something, we don't want you to talk about it on the stage. And you are the perfect example of why we ask that, because just like my vision of you coming out of that bathroom stall is exactly, I think, what most people have this vision, a very narrow vision of just your badassery. And, you know, even badasses have a soft side and stories to tell that sometimes we hold close. And so it was great to see you in such a vulnerable spot, and what a gift it was to give to us and everyone.
Oh, thank you. It was really an honor to do. I'm really glad I did it. I'm very thankful. I'm really proud to be part of this group of growing, amazing women. It just gets better and better. And to have been, especially so early on, part of the family, it's now I can just sit back and really enjoy the ride and watch other people grow and blossom in ways they didn't know was possible.
When I saw you at the Pride Parade in Champaign, and you were excited, so the tangled web that is the She Said sisterhood, there was someone that you had been close with in the Bloomington show, and so we were talking about that, and I thought, boy, the chickens have really come home to roost, how we all, sometimes it's someone new that we support, and then sometimes it's someone from our past that mm-hmm. we build up and cheer on, and although I'm convinced you know everybody in a 50-mile radius. Or everyone knows you.
For good or for ill, having spent so much time on the news and doing presentations, and it's really strange when people come up to me in the grocery store and just start talking to me as if they'd known me for 30 years.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. But in truth, in a lot of ways, I feel like my story is every story. And it's not the details that matter.
Right.
Everyone has a story to tell. And women in particular, especially the more compassionate they are, the more likely to see, like, well, what I have been through isn't as, or I shouldn't, right? We tend to minimize our own stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the reality is what you've gone through is what you've gone through. And in your life, what matters is your story. And we all have that story of being both vulnerable and strong at the same time. We have those stories of being where everybody knows your face and yet nobody really knows you. we all have those moments of being so many different people at the same time and trying to figure out how do we integrate them in a way that is authentic and fun and joyful while still connecting with the things in our life that make the awareness of that joy possible, right? How do we show up and be complete people? And I think that's a challenge that women face on a day-to-day basis because we have so many demands on our time and our energy. And it's not that men don't. I don't know what it's like to be a man. Right. I can only speak to my experience as a woman. And, you know, the older we get, the more demands there are. And so that challenge to integrate and to be authentic, I thought would get easier as I got older. I thought I'll just be more me and that integration will just be so much more simple. And I find that the opposite is true because as more people think they know who I am and as there are more demands on my time and more things that I'm actually capable of doing, the more intentional I have to be about pulling things back and being authentically me in the moment so that I can be present and have the strength of the things that matter here and now. And I think women in particular, it's hard to slow down and think, okay, who am I now? And who am I going to be next? And give ourselves permission to let the other stuff sort of filter away so that that authentic me right now is the core and the center of everything that I do and I say and who I am. And for me, that she said moment was really a highlight of all of who I am coming together in one moment that was really crystal. But it was people that I'd never met before that I've gotten to know since then. But also, one of my professors when I was 17 was in that audience.
Wow.
When all of the things that I was trying to reconcile just for who I really was for the first time in my life, he knew me then. And for the first time, he knew why. Literally the past and the present and the future in that moment came together in one room in one time for me. And it's still magical when I think about it. And so thank you.
It was the image that you had created when I was looking at you and seeing little you in pajamas. And in every show, there's a moment where I sort of look to my left and my right and sort of try to be very purposeful and present in gratitude for the women that I'm sharing the stage with. And that night, it was like I just tried to see everybody in their little pajamas and thinking that really is how the whole world is walking around. You know, we all might pass as adults, maybe some of us less than others, but we all are still, it's all combined. It's all those things. And we all do sort of carry that teddy bear around.
Mm-hmm. Well, and thank God for teddy bears.
Right?
What would I have done without it?
Universal symbol of comfort. But Isak, what you spoke about is so true. As you get older, sometimes it feels like it's more work. It's more work to separate the noise from the reality of who you are in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how you pointed out that what we've created with That's What She Said is a vehicle or a tool, an opportunity to do that,
mm-hmm.
to shut out all of the noise in that moment and just be, whew, here we go. This is me. This is me.
Mm-hmm. And one of the beautiful things about it is when somebody creates that space, it invites other people to show up. It's like,
yes.
You don't even have to be on the stage,
right,
to show up as your authentic self. You just need to be in the spirit of, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Me right here, right now. And you can step into it and just enjoy it in the moment. And my kids can't wait to go in February, including my boys. They're like, I want to go because they've experienced just that moment of being really present in their own story while living somebody else's story. And what a gift. And if boys can get it when they're tweens, imagine what it can do for other folks who are just really ready to step into that space and say, I want to be me right here, right now.
It's- well, and everyone who shows up is in that mindset.
Yes.
Nobody comes to this show looking for anything but, you know what it is. You know you're there to support women. And last year, my children came for the first time ever. And I hope that when, you know, to their 40-year-old selves, that they remember and that it somehow has an impact on them that there was... The Virginia Theater was filled with people there for the sole purpose of supporting other women,
mm-hmm.
instead of the stereotype of women, you know, being catty and whatever. They were part of sitting in an audience where people were listening to these stories.
And I hope they come back because who they are now is different from who they were a year ago. And so if they show up, they're going to find themselves in a whole new space inside themselves. Mm-hmm. And we can do it over and over and over and see ourselves grow and appreciate and celebrate how awesome we are in addition to how awesome all these women around us are. It's such a great community and such a great family and so much fun.
It is so fun.
It is. It's this unique creative experience that I am right now in the crux of working with the 2020 cast, and they are 1 month out from their big night, and watching them have all the nerves and excitement and expectations and the hard work and the realizations. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal journey to watch them look into a mirror and go, I can do this, and this is me, and I'm going to stand on a stage and people are going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to hear what I have to say.
And they're going to care.
What an empowering moment. Yes.
And they can do it. They really can do it.
Was there anything that took you by surprise? Anything you didn't expect?
If I'd thought about it, it might not have come as a surprise because I have been on stage before. But, you know, when we went through dress rehearsals and there's this black wall in front of you because the lights make you blind.
Right.
So you really can't see folks. And my dress rehearsal was awful because I'm so used to interacting with people. When I tell stories, I tell stories to human beings. And so telling the story to this black wall and empty rooms really shook me to my core. You know, so I had to take a break before the actual performance and kind of regroup, knowing that although there'd be an audience, I'd still just see the black wall and think about what I needed to do to really connect with the people that I couldn't see. And again, I've been on stage before. This should not have come as a surprise. But I was so caught in what I thought I was there to do that I kind of forgot in advance the moment of it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I went and I completely redid my notes and I completely changed the way I was going to like just walk into it and think about it to be really fully prepared. And part of why that was cool is because then I was really in the moment because I'd never done it that way before. And by the way, I wouldn't recommend anyone do it that way.
Let's just change everything right now. Oh, and curtain.
Yeah, but and partly because my story was so raw.
Yeah,
that worked because it was genuinely raw. Mm-hmm. There was no acting. There was no performance. I was just telling a story, and I was really raw, and I was really scared, but I was okay being scared.
Yeah,
and I think that's something we forget. It's really okay to be terrified to your bones, because you're not alone. We never are. We can be scared. We can be vulnerable. We can be exhausted. We can be angry. We can be all kinds of things, but not be alone.
And when you succeed at this one thing, the next time there's a challenge in front of you, oh my gosh, it's a little bit easier. I'm a little bit braver. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit more together because I know I'm not alone. And it grows from there.
And knowing that people actually want to hear your story, that might be one of the biggest gifts that you give, especially people who tell stories they've never told before. And part of why we don't tell them is because we're afraid that no one's going to listen.
Well, Carrie, how many times have you heard from someone you've talked to about being on the show? Who, me? I don't have a story.
That's like waving a red flag in front of a bull, because the second somebody says, I'm just a fill in the blank, a mom, a this, a that, I don't have anything to say. Those are the people that immediately I want, not just for because they'll be great on stage, but because I want them to see mm-hmm. their stories are all of our stories, and that they have value. Mm-hmm. Often you say that when you don't think your story has value.
And there's somebody in that room who needs to hear each and every story, right? Even if all you have to do is connect with one human being, and you can literally transform how they feel about themselves. And I honestly believe that has happened every single time.
And hopefully right here, right now, we are creating an opportunity to do that even more. Because mm-hmm. we're playing your story and hopefully sharing with more women in our community, in our state, in our world. So, Isaac, thank you so much for doing it all over again and, and being this beacon of light and inspiration in our hearts and in our lives, and now giving us the gift of sharing you with even more people. So that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us. We are here to raise women's voices one story at a time. Join us next week when we dive in with another powerful woman who's going to be brave and share her story here on the She Said Project podcast. Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of The She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives. Learn more at sterlingwealthmanagement.com.